Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Everyone to a very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. I know we missed a week last week, but we're recovering from GP Portland, and Ryan was getting ready for Gen Con. I thought Jason was too, but I guess he didn't quite make it. But we're here.
You make it sound like I tried and like blew a tire or something like that. Went, well, I guess it's not in the cards. I did not try to make it. I opted out this year and regret it.
Yeah, this is the second year in a row that I've missed, and it feels sad, but after Portland, I just couldn't do another trip.
Yeah, I wish I could do back-to-backs, but yeah, no, Portland took a lot out of me.
And I chained like Dallas into Portland, and I left for Portland like early Thursday morning and got back from Dallas on Monday, so it was like very fast turnaround. So yeah, regret missing Gen Con. Hopefully I'll be back next year.
And now that I don't have a free place to stay, it kind of throws off my Gen Con math a little bit. I was going to hobo it and just go, and everyone's like, go sleep at Steak and Shake. And I was like, I really like having a hotel room. So
that seems like a bad idea.
I heard that it would have grew by 17% attendance.
57,000 attendees on this year.
I'm surprised it was that, actually. Like, it felt like there was more. You couldn't park within three blocks.
Oh, that's non-sane, really?
Lucas Oil was the closest parking, and they had it closed Saturday for a Colts pregame. You get to park by the Hard Rock Cafe.
That's a good four blocks.
Yep.
That's a lot of blocks.
Yeah, believe me. That's on the other side of the fountain. That's crazy.
Oh, believe me. I walked 20-plus miles this weekend. Oh. I know.
Yeah, but that exercise.
Yeah, when you're Ryan and you have a heart condition.
Yeah.
You're not exactly sweating to the oldies when your heart explodes.
I mean, he didn't have a good time walking the five blocks in Montreal.
Well, that's just because he's a bitch.
Because five blocks in Montreal is 20 miles, that's why.
Yeah, that did feel like forever. Like, I don't know where those underground tunnels led us, but yeah, that was not enjoyable.
So did you have a good time? So we got some stories about our trips, because we had quite the time. I actually got to hang out with Corbin while I was in Portland for at least the first day and a half.
That's too bad.
How awful is that?
Shut up.
Oh, he sabotaged everyone.
Oh my God, I did.
Tell the story, B-dubs. Marcel. Tell the story.
All right, we gotta start with the B-dub story.
Jeez. So tell the story. Just don't screw it up.
I don't have to. There's multiple accounts. You can listen to Heavy Meta. You can listen to Money Draft, and you can listen to the A Team. Even though actually, I don't think Jay was there for the B-dub, so there's nothing on there about that on the A Team. Was quite hilarious. So you could get a cross-reference about what happened at Portland, and you got some hilarious stories. So I highly recommend that you listen to those casts. It's from last week's. So you must listen. Money Draft is dropped today, which is Tuesday, so check it out.
Money Draft!
But yeah, so all right, so we just got back from Toro Bravo. You know, this is a high-end Spanish tapas. It's a really good restaurant in Portland. It's a little pricey, and, you know, the portions are a little small. But, hey, you know, when you want to eat good, you want to eat gourmet, you want to eat top of the line, that's kind of what you get. So we got a party of eight, I think we had.
Eight or nine, sure.
Yeah, so everyone was there. We got together. And Corbin was, gnashing his teeth the entire
time. None of this is true. None of this is true.
It's all believable.
He complained about, he was like, why are we going to Spanish tapas? I don't know what's that there.
No, that's not none true. I just said I don't know what a Spanish tapa is.
Yeah, but you said you looked at the menus like, I don't want none of this. None of this looks
good
to me.
No, that's not true. I was lied to.
The singular.
Okay, wait. Okay.
I was viciously lied to about it was in the first place. You said, we're going to Spanish tapas. And I said, I don't even know what that is. What is that? And somebody goes, oh, it's like they serve everything on a little, you know, it's like Mexican food. They serve everything on a little tortilla, and you just pick what you want on your tortilla. And I'm like, I don't want anything on my fucking tortilla, because that's not what I want to eat. So, like, whatever. So I'm just like, guys, it's fine, you know. I'll eat while we're there. I'll find something, you know. I'm not going to get in anyone's way. So we go there, and it's actually this delicious food, which is nothing like how it was described to me. And I ate a bunch of it, and it was really good.
Yes, Corbin, Corbin, his interpretation of what Spanish tapas was, and we had this talk.
It wasn't an interpretation. Somebody told me in our party.
No,
lied to me.
No,
that's not even true, Marcel, because it was admitted to.
Who told you that? I don't know. Corbin, why are you so defensive? Why are you so defensive? Let me tell you
something. There are vicious lies. Vicious lies being spread about me right now.
Oh, my God. No, all right. Well, let me get back to the story. Just calm down, Corbin. Just get back in your cage.
Hey, Corbin, chill out, man. What's your problem?
Defamation of character.
Continue your story.
So, as it went around, Corbin was a little hesitant towards some of the tapas. He was going towards the ones that seemed safe. And, you know, eventually we got him to try some of the other ones, and he enjoyed it. He actually did. He enjoyed the shrimp. The shrimp was hands down. He got his own plate of shrimp. He took that there. And there was a couple other ones that was a little, you know, a little weird for him, and he was a little hesitant. He got towards it. But, you know, while we're having this delicious tapas food, he went on about B-dubs and how excellent B-dubs is, and, you know, his whole B-dubs experience, and telling the table while we're eating this food. So, you know, he's planting the seed of discontent early on.
Stab him?
We're still not entirely telling the truth here.
Corbin, did you not mention D-dubs several times at the table?
We almost skipped dinner entirely because we ate lunch at 2 o'clock, remember?
Yes.
And we almost skipped dinner, and we were walking down the street like 2 hours before dinner. We were talking about skipping it, and I was like, guys, we should probably go to dinner, because if we don't go to dinner, we're just gonna end up being hungry at like 10, 11 o'clock tonight, and the only thing that's going to be open is B-dubs, and you don't want B-dubs at 11 o'clock. So somehow this becomes, Corbin says we have to go to B-dubs, and before you fucking know it, it's midnight and everyone wants to go to B-dubs. They're yelling at me to order it.
No, alright, so you gotta, this is the whole point though. He planted the seed early on. This is not like innocent. Oh, I just happened to mention B-dubs. It's like, you know, like Corbin planted the seed, and then he reinforced it when we went to tapas.
Oh my God, it was a joke. And then you guys took it seriously,
That's the problem. People took it. See, the thing is, we had dinner reservations early because that was the only time they could entertain us for reservations. So of course, you know, after you're drinking and we're having a good time, you know, the munchies will creep in, and we had to eat. You know, people had to eat. It was 11 o'clock. So of course, someone had the bright idea, because somehow someone had it in their head that there's this thing called B-dubs and it's available at night. I don't know why people did. It was a Vorthos Mike. I think he was the...
Yes, it was Linneman. It was all his fault.
Oh, but the seed was planted. He never heard about B-dubs till he met you, Corbin.
But he wanted nothing but B-dubs once he found out about it. He looked up the number. He drove. He handed me the phone to call them. He took the orders of everyone in the house. And you ordered it, Marcel. You ordered it.
Of course I'm going to order it.
You're an enabler.
Food. I was going to eat it. I was going to try it. But I learned. I was like, I'm not getting in the hot. I'm going to try this other flavor. And, oh, my God, it was disgusting.
I've heard the biggest issue. Now, if you listen to Money Draft, Slick Jagger will tell everyone the biggest issue is the fact that the house only had one toilet. Is that correct?
Yes. Oh,
yes.
You should have seen it. At the same time, there was several people that had to use the toilet at a convenient time that was, like, very – you know, synchronized together. So there was almost a little tussle over trying to get into the bathroom there.
Did you guys like play a cube draft for it? Whoever won the cube draft got to use the bathroom first?
We didn't do a lot of cube though.
It wasn't that bad. But I will say B-dubs did affect some people's stomach, and it was noted. It was duly noted by
I warned you 12 hours earlier not to eat B-dubs at midnight. You all
ever. I warned people for years not to eat there ever.
We're like gremlins now. We can't eat B-dubs after.
I don't understand. When Slick Jagger's like, yeah, Corbin made everybody order B-dubs.
Oh my God.
Hey, that's the narrative, man.
I know. This is why it's such bullshit.
That's how legends are born, Corbin. You're a legend.
Oh my God. Everyone just makes up lies and
that's
Mike just skates
rap,
off.
Dude. Like, that's your MO.
Mike skates off and just talks about Vorthos stuff some more while I get pinned with the forced everyone to go to B-dubs rap.
You know why? Because Michael Linneman does not have the the rep for making.
Well, you know what? He set me up, and he set me up well.
He did it. You fell for it. Wait, hey,
like
you can talk about
Kaiser Soze, like laughing into the sunset as you're pinned with the blame. Get out of here.
Oh man. And then didn't it take him like 10 minutes to get the Prius started also?
Yeah, see, well, okay, you know, like I was heading to the house. We were drinking. I wasn't planning on going anywhere. He shouldn't drive. So I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude, I'll go with you. Sure. I guess this is like my deal. So, but yeah, I wasn't going to drive. I couldn't help him with the Prius. So it took him 10 minutes to figure out how to get the parking brake off. Also, with the Prius that Marcel rented, when we first left the airport, it was Marcel, TSG, and I, and Marcel turned the car on, but he didn't know he turned the car on because it's a Prius that makes no noise.
He doesn't make a noise.
At all.
So we were all sitting there and we're like, I've never been in a Prius before. I don't know. Just turn it on, dude. Marcel's like, fuck it. I'll just try, whatever. And then he like pulls forward and hits the curb. hits a wall in the parking garage with the attendant standing right next to us staring at us while he cleans out the other car. Dang, and we're like, oh, I guess the car's on.
That's how you embellish a story. Good job, Corbin. No.
That's exactly what happened. Every word of that was true.
Yeah, I kept pressing the on button. Like, why is this not coming on? I got put in the brake, turned that. Is the parking brake off? Why is this? You know, the lights are on. And then, you know, I finally hit it and it does that. And then the crazy part, though, is, you know, we go to Maddie's hotel. You know, we gotta drop off our luggage because we don't get to our.
Oh, forgot about that. Yep.
And we didn't get our house, till a little bit later. So we had to drop off our luggage to keep it good. And so we met up with, Luke Narian on Twitter. He went to this, diner, Mother's. So we had it was good. It was nice, food. We had some sandwiches and stuff. So we, you know, we got in, he had a reservation. We were able to, you know, knock out a good lunch in an hour and then we were going to reconvene. So I go back to my car. We're ready to go drive off and I'm like, oh shit. The car has been on the entire time.
Well, yeah, we got in. I got in, like, I opened the door as Marcel's opening his door, and I felt the air conditioning, and I was like, oh, this Prius is cool. The air conditioning comes on when you open the door? That's cool. And, yeah. And then we figured out that Marcel just left it running for an hour and a half while we walked around downtown Portland.
You have to hit the button that says power.
I found that out later. Good thing, you know, the battery was still going strong, so
and then nobody, you know, stole the,
no, the
turned
the
on
is
car.
A tank. It's almost idiot proof. Yeah. I say almost because all those cases of unintended acceleration were just old people putting it in the wrong gear. But now, what can you do?
Well, hey, Prius was, and then we gave the keys to Jay Boosh one time, and it took him literally 10 minutes before he came back in the house and asked about it. So that Prius.
Well, see,
was a curse.
I missed all of that because. Unlike these guys who just got a party all weekend, I actually had to work the Grand Prix, which was a very exciting team Grand Prix. And we saw, you know, the super team of Owen Reed and Huey Jensen win. It was very exciting. These guys wouldn't know anything about it because they just spent the whole time at the house partying. Right, Marcel?
No, I wasn't there for day one. And
you went. How'd you do in day one? Tell us.
We won three. One of the matches could have went to a draw, and we decided.
How did you finish? What was that record?
1-3 drop.
Oh.
Because one of them would have been a draw, and then we were like, well, it was to the tooth and nail, and we were like, whatever, we'll just give it to them, because we kind of wanted to get back to the house. Because I didn't want to be at the GP. I would rather just, play with TSG's cube. It was just an enjoyable.
TSG's, yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
That was where the GP was at. But I mean, I'm not saying that I had a good time at the GP, and I think, in the future, I'm going to do events. Either I'm going for the GP and then hanging out, or I'm going to go to hang out and then the GP is there. So I think this was too much of a – it was too much of being pulled from different angles. So it was weird.
Well, you also take on all the responsibility of cooking, which is awesome, but it does make it difficult to play and worry about getting all the food and then worry about actually cooking all the food.
Yeah, that was, it worked out. It worked out. I mean, the food turned out, from what I heard, everyone enjoyed it. There was some stuff that was overcooked.
You got pissed at me on Friday.
What's that?
Because I was hungry. I tried to sneak some food off the grill, and Marcel was like, hey, put that down. You boy, put that down. That food ain't ready yet. And I was like, I'm just so hungry, sir. May I please have some food? And he's like, fuck no.
Damn.
That's how I felt as I tried to get some chicken while I cubed.
Was that worth ruining our PG-13 rating over? Thanks, Corbin.
Hey, that was our one.
PG-13, hey. You get one. You can say fuck one time.
Yep. What happens if you say fuck twice?
Oh, no. Oh, fuck.
We're fucked.
It's over.
Oh, no. Now someone's not going to read a Gathering Magic articles anymore.
So don't say that.
So I was able to go to the event, and it was good. Like, I liked building the sealed pool. I thought I had a decent amount of pool. It just turned out that the matches didn't really quite work out, and we're eager to go home. So going around the event, it looked like everyone was having a good time. It looked like it was huge. The artist alley was just great. It felt like a very good GP. It had a good atmosphere. The prize wall felt good overall. You know, I felt that they pulled off a good event. But Corbin, you were there.
Prize wall for people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I actually talked to Tim Shields, the tournament organizer at Cascade Games, and the man, he went above and beyond for this Grand Prix. 13 artists, all in a hallway outside of the main convention center hall itself. So you had to walk past them to go to the event. And it was really cool because you got people who wouldn't normally go to artist booths walking past artist booths and checking them out. And it's great if they're not in the middle of dealers or whatever in the main hall. They're outside altogether. It made it really convenient for players. It was awesome. The other big innovation, there were two. One of them was that the Grand Prix actually started on Thursday. And Thursday was busy at the site. You know, Grand Prix it's kind of like over, as Grand Prix have begun to grow recently, they do more and more on Friday. Well, they just took it a step farther. They said, we're doing the Grand Prix on Thursday.
I heard a lot of dealers that there's actually not a lot of buying going on Thursday.
No, I'm sure there wasn't. There was a lot of people playing Magic, though.
Well, people aren't used to it yet. I think once that's the new normal, it'll pick up.
Yeah, if it becomes the new normal. I mean, it depends. It probably doesn't work in every location. There were a lot of people there. They also helped that the Pro Tour was the week before, so people were able to just stay and be there on Thursday. And that's not obviously not the case all the time. But the other big innovation.
It should be, don't you? That worked out well.
For the Pro Tours in Pro Tour cities.
Right, absolutely. But it depends on the, I guess it makes the economics of it for the dealer or for the TO. You know, it sometimes that stuff is booked. Sometimes it just costs too much to have it open for an additional day versus what you're going to take in. You know, you got to staff it for an additional day. It's not trivial, right? It just means it probably won't work for every event. But the other thing they did, and this was probably the coolest thing that I know people loved, was the prize wall.
Amazing.
So if you do a side event starting on Thursday till whenever, rather than, hey, you get 10 packs for this, or hey, you won an 8-man, you get a box. Instead, you would get tickets, and it basically works, like every arcade or whatever you've ever been to. You accumulate tickets and you go buy stuff at the end. So you apply this to Magic, you can still get the same amount of packs or boxes or whatever you're going to get. But they also had, boxes of other sets. They had the Planeswalker toys. They had sealed product. They even had singles that they had partnered with Channel Fireball. It really allowed people to tailor their prize to what they wanted, which, talking to Tim about it, it was, they run all these events, and they run specialty events, where it's there's commander pods, or there's, the big 64 player drafts where you sit next to each other and attack sideways or whatever, all these kind of different stuff. And they never knew, what is the best prize to get people to want to play in these. Well, it turns out when you let people pick their own prize, they always want to play. And they did, they called it an infinity bracelet, where on Thursday or the whole weekend, but you could pay $100 and get a bracelet and play in any constructed event you wanted. And that was also very popular, is that it really allowed people to, the people who were trying to game the prize wall to play a lot of events and get a lot of prizes for, that $100 up front, but then nothing for the rest of the weekend. So they got a lot of positive feedback on the prize wall.
Yeah, I think this should be incorporated by this TOs everywhere. Because, if people don't understand, you get your amount of packs that you're normally supposed to. So if you're going to get – if you were supposed to win two boxes, you'll get 720 tickets. 10 tickets represents a pack. So if you wanted to cash out, you can still get your boxes. You get your prize support that you normally want. But this allows other people to get other things. And there's no way this is not a positive for just everybody involved.
My favorite story to come out of this is the reason they wanted to do the prize wall, the genesis of the idea, They wanted to get, Tim Shields wanted to sell a Garrick Axe, the Nerf Axe from Comic-Con. That's how the entire idea for this event came about. I mean, so we could have a reason to give away that prize.
Another interesting factoid about the prize wall is that I guess they sold a lot of candy through the prize wall, and people chose to get snacks instead of packs often. So I don't know that what that says about us, about the community, but it's just an interesting factoid.
If there were packs of M15, I'd rather have some fucking Skittles or something. That's for sure. A 45 cent pack of Skittles or a $3 pack M15? Oh, God, that's tough. I can't eat Skittles because I'm diabetic, but on the other hand, M15, oh, God.
Hey, man, you get hungry. I ate convention center food both days and enjoyed it. I was so hungry.
Yes, and you went back to B-Dubs for the second time, too.
Do I have to tell this story, too?
No. Yes. We do not want to hear it.
They screwed up the order the first time we went to B-Dubs. Well, we thought they screwed up the order. It turns out Marcel just couldn't find his food in the bag.
No, they still didn't give me half of my thing.
Okay. Half of Marcel's order was missing.
Unless someone ate half of my order and then didn't tell me.
They might have. I'm pretty sure it was all there because the girl specifically said it was all there. But anyways, I called them to complain. And they're like, okay, well, you know, we can give you like $10 on your account for the missing food here. And I'm like, well, I live in Oklahoma and not Portland. Can you transfer it? And they're like, no, it only applies at this store. And I'm like, okay, well, if I somehow end up at B-Dubs in the next 4 days, great. So Saturday night after the GP, everyone else is going to crash, and I'm not with these guys because I'm working. And I'm just like, F it, I need some food, and there's free food at B-Dubs. So I walk like half a mile to B-Dubs to get my free food. And it turns out I went to the wrong one and had to pay full price for mediocre B-Dubs at midnight again. It was the biggest blowout of the entire weekend.
Is it mediocre question, B-Dubs redundant?
Yeah, I was going to say, when is B-Dubs not mediocre?
Well, I mean, that's
when
like...
it's poor, when it's below average.
If you're comparing to other B-Dubs, then it has to be.
Oh, I guess. Right? Within the category of B-Dubs, yeah, there could be excellent B-Dubs and there's bad B-Dubs. I'll give you that.
There's bad B-Dubs and there's terrible B-Dubs.
So For instance, I had some excellent B-Dubs tonight.
Okay, why is this cast becoming B-dubbed out?
Oh, I don't know why you guys keep bringing it up.
No, I just mentioned it, and you like, let's go into. I said, let me tell the story, and I'm like, no.
I feel like I have to defend myself in my trips to B-dubs because you keep bringing it up.
Oh, I just said you.
It's kind of your thing.
Oh my god! Shut up! This is how Portland went. I try not to talk about it, and it keeps being brought up to me.
Well. There's more awesome things in Portland going on. Let's see. Let me tell. There's other stories. Oh my god! Like we could talk about some of the cool stuff. Like, all right, I'll give it. JR had hands down the best drink of the weekend.
What was it?
The Kraken and chocolate milk.
Kraken and chocolate milk. You think it sounds
just a ghetto Black Russian? Is what that is.
Whatever it is, it could.
You might
be
as well
that.
Make it with Yoo-Hoo as long as you're going ghetto.
He had really actually good high quality. Chocolate milk, so I don't think it would be like a ghetto.
Top shelf chocolate.
It was organic, raw chocolate milk.
Raw chocolate milk, straight from the cow.
80% cacao.
From a brown cow.
Hey, but it was actually very tasty, and I that was the one thing I wish I would have drank more of. Like that was probably the most tastiest drink of the weekend. So I will take that home with me, and I'll definitely give JR the award of best drink of the weekend.
Interesting,
and most inventive too.
All right. So what else we got? Well, that's Portland. What do we got from Gen Con, Ryan? Anything interesting going on there?
I mean, not really. Just mostly went, hung out with vendors. Didn't really play anything. Just went to Gen Con. Lots of walking. Downtown Indianapolis, though, for every year is packed for Gen Con, was especially packed this year. Parking was impossible to find. And just overall, it seemed like the city was no longer just taken over by gamers, but was so full that you couldn't walk around in the convention center at times.
It was the biggest Gen Con ever, wasn't it?
57,000 attendees.
The 57,000 I feel like that number has to be low in some sense. Maybe that's 4 day badges or something, because it felt like there was a lot, like the Thursday there felt like the Saturday last year. Wow. And the Saturday was unbearable. Like you could not walk around in the exhibitors hall on Saturday.
Mm.
The line that they had set up for, like Pathfinder was around like pretty much an entire side of the convention center.
Now they have hallways in this convention center that are good 25 to 30 feet wide. So in front of the doors to the exhibitor hall, the hallways are, I would say, a good 25 to 30 feet wide. I saw pictures of just like a solid mass of people, like maybe 50 yards long and like the entire width of that 30 foot wide hallway. Just a solid mass of people waiting at 9 a.m. to get into the exhibitor hall. So this is, God, I don't want to say the Indianapolis Convention Center isn't big enough for Gen Con, but I don't know, man. Like it's getting insane.
It's getting there. Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt like, and that's the thing is like, how do you get bigger? Like where do you go? Like Indianapolis Convention Center is already quite large when you consider all the hotels that are attached and everything. And
I mean, they already make use of the ballrooms in the, in that hotel. There are rooms in adjacent hotels. I actually played a game that was not in the convention center or an attached hotel. It was actually in a non-attached hotel.
They had to
they are running out of places to go.
They would have to go to Vegas. Like Vegas is the premier convention space, and they got it's expensive.
Chicago. They would have to go to Chicago.
Chicago's very expensive.
It in the Midwest, though.
You can't do Chicago, though. Can you imagine the nightmare of hotels downtown Chicago for that?
We're doing it in Rosemont. There's a big convention center where they do C2E2, the Comic Entertainment Crap Expo, or whatever the second C stands for. It's in Rosemont, so that's, you know, Rosemont is basically set up for Chicago overflow. So, you know, you could stay in the towns around Rosemont. The convention center is nice and big. It could handle all that volume. I really think that might be what they have to do. I think Wizard World Chicago is in Rosemont as well. So, that's a possibility, but, I don't know. Like, obviously the organizers of Gen Con are excited that it's so successful, but the prospect of outgrowing that space is, it's kind of crazy.
How is the magic there?
I mean, I'm probably not the right person to ask.
Was it as non-existent as it usually is?
No, they had an entire good side of one of the halls, and it seemed like they were pretty busy when I walked in there, but I mean, I didn't go and look into the events or see what was going on or anything like that, so.
I really wish they would have spoiled a card or two at Gen Con. Like,
yeah, I was a little surprised they didn't.
So there was a card spoiled at GamesCon. We got three cards spoiled at GamesCon.
GamesCon is a big deal. They played League of Legends European Championships there, and that's a very, very large convention.
So, I mean, I realize they're reaching a lot of people, but again, I get into this every year where I get a little sour that, you know, that Magic forgets its Gen Con roots. Like, Gen Con was a very early supporter of the game, and I don't know that if Magic would exist in its current form as a very popular game if not for those early Gen Cons. So, I don't know. I really wish they'd do a little bit more, but, like, they have a finite budget, and they want to allocate that money elsewhere. I understand they're a business, but I don't know. I just, as a Gen Con attendee regularly, I really wish they made a bigger deal out of the premier gaming convention. But that's, you know, that's something I get into every year, so let's not do that again.
I think there might be a little more, I think there might be a little more pressure on them next year with the sudden growth in attendance, though. I mean, the past 2 years have both been insane for attendance. And there was, I don't know, there was a lot more Magic dealers there than there has ever been before.
Well, next year's not Magic's 20th anniversary. Last year was.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they definitely could have played that up a little more than they did. There was nothing about that. So.
Well, there's an interesting thing about that is that they were trying, and I don't remember which, you know, article in the Mothership I read this in, but they were trying to balance the fact that, hey, it's our 20th anniversary, let's celebrate it. And the alternative line of looking at it, if you're an outsider, is, oh, this game's been going for 20 years. I'm so far behind. I won't understand it. I'm not going to try. Because that's like a real thing that they were concerned about.
Sounds like corporate spin to me.
I don't know.
Because they certainly don't shy away from saying how long Dungeons & Dragons has been going.
Some people maybe do.
That's where Wizards of the Coast, I will say, as someone who plays Dungeons & Dragons a little bit, I don't have a regular group, but like the Dungeons and Dragons display they put on last year was very impressive. And from the pictures I saw, they did something very similar this year. And R.A. Salvatore was there, which is cool. So I don't know if Wizards is responsible for that, but, Yeah, whatever. So they Wizards of the Coast as a company doesn't ignore Gen Con. It's just the magic side of it.
I think part of the problem, too, is Wizards of the Coast doesn't actually do Gen Con. They hand it off to Pastimes.
As the TO, yeah.
Right, but I mean, I think that, you know, it's a little different than, like, if you're doing a pro tour or something like that, where that's where they usually are doing their coverage. And, like, I mean, do they give it out to the TO to show, or do they do a panel, or what? Like, I don't know that they really had much representation there, which, yeah, probably is a mistake, but I guess, well, I don't know what their best outlet for it.
I do think that's part of it, is that they don't have a lot of control over a lot of stuff. You know, they kind of have, if they were to do it, they'd have their corner or whatever, and that's kind of it. You know, they don't, there's not a lot they can do in terms of just having access to the venue, the resources. I mean, would it hurt them to have a panel or two at Gen Con? Probably not, you know, but is it vital? I don't think it is either. Are there some logistical issues there? Yeah.
Oh, well, that's your kind of Gen Con 101. Do we want to talk about some Finance 101?
Finance 101.
Yay. Let's do it.
Or as Corbin just put it in the show notes, Fic Acne 101.
Yeah, I didn't spell very well. So spelling's hard.
So this week's Finance 101, we're going to talk about rotation pickups. I believe we talked about rotation before and get rid of cards. And it's also, rotation is very important to learn to pick up your cards. And we're now at this window where you're going to see a lot of cards dipping and people unloading their cards and opportunities to get in cards cheap as they rotate out. And if these cards are going to be playable in the internal formats, you'll see these cards rise over time and your investments increase. So it's a prime opportunity for everyone in Magic Finance. Everyone licks their lips. You know, they rubbing their palms together. They know that this is the time that, you know, you earn your oats as calling your finance calls. So let's dive into this. You guys got some tips for people on what to look for on rotation pickups?
I mean, I guess I'm, yeah, whatever. I'm just going to spoil mine, I guess, even raw before I get a chance to buy in. So there are two cards in particular that I think everyone is just kind of ignoring and forgetting that we're going into this format where three color is going to be a thing. Like, no matter what, you're going to be forced into some sort of three color variant, more than likely. And yes, there will be two color decks, but most primary decks are going to be three color or more. That means Mana Confluence should no longer be a $10 card. Cavern of Souls saw, 20. Yeah, 20 to, no, it saw 30 for a while and stayed there for a while. And there is no reason that Mana Confluence can't do the same thing. And the difference being, Cavern was mostly played by the aggro decks. You did have a couple of control decks that ran it. Mana Confluence, I think, is going to be played by every deck. You are going to have five color variants. Yeah, that's going to happen. We have the mana for it. This is Reflecting Pool. We're getting our tricolor lands. Like, the mana is set up to be able to, with Scry and stuff, be able to do a five-color control deck if the, you know, the pieces are there, or at least a four-color control deck. So you have that all the way down to your
control deck.
Sure, but all the way down to your aggro variants that are suddenly going to have this powerful, there's probably not necessarily Sprouting Thyrnax itself, but something along those lines where you need to be able to cast this creature on three, and it's very mana-dependent. And Mana Confluence is perfect for that.
So, right, and what Ryan's saying here, you know, kind of tying into the rotation aspect of 101, is that the time to pick up cards, you got to always be looking ahead in Magic and, you know, in Magic Finance. So not only is rotation about, you know, looking ahead at the cards that are going to rotate out to get rid of them, it's about picking up the cards that you're going to need for the next season before the market adjusts. And that's where something like Mana Confluence comes in, is you have to look at the cards available to you after rotation. And if you think you're in a deck that, you know, may need Mana Confluence, which, like as we're saying, you probably are, you know, a lot of time these cards, they go up after rotation as more people start to play them. So it's a good idea to get in on them, you know, kind of in the now period, a month and a half before rotation, you know, before those price corrections really come in.
Because rotation does two things to the metagame. It adds decks and it removes decks. So it's probably going, even though we're not losing Nykthos and stuff like that, I think a lot of the dominant, you know, mono-colored devotion decks are losing quite a bit. You know, the decks are losing Night Vale Spectre and, you know, non-Night Vale Spectre cards.
Well, one of the important ones is Underworld Connections, for instance.
Exactly. Connections in the mono black deck. So you're losing your pack rat, which is huge. Like, you'll still have your gray merchant and your Nykthos, but like, you're losing really a lot of the basis of the deck. Maybe there's going to be like a mono green deck, but what it's also doing is adding a lot of these three color lands that are exciting. So people are going to get to brew with three color decks. So not only is it taking decks away, it's adding decks. So you got to think about, what is good now but not getting played because mono black and mono blue devotion are so much better. So if you look at a card like Soldier of the Pantheon that's got protection from multicolors, that was one of the reasons I was saying if there are three color lands, there are going to be three colored creatures probably. So something that's got protection from multicolored, that like Soldier of the Pantheon's terrible against Pack Rat, Nightfall Spectre, and Grey Merchant of Asphodel right now, but is it going to be a little bit better post-rotation when we're losing the decks that are, you know, good against it, and we're adding the decks that are bad against it.
Another thing that's very important to remember in rotation, it's not just affecting Standard. Internal formats and Modern, especially as it's gaining more traction and that we're getting the GP or the Pro Tour is coming back and we're going to have that continue on. Interest in Modern is still going to be there, and cards shoot up post-rotation. We see like Liliana the Veil and Gristlebrand. Cards like Batterskull, as soon as they get out of rotation, they shoot up. So right now you should be looking at Return to Ravnica cards, Dragon's Maze cards, Gatecrash, trying to see anything there that you would see in play Modern now, or potentially has the potential to the power level to get there. Cards like Supreme Verdict or Abrupt Decay, Deathrite Shaman, which is not Modern but a Legacy. You know, cards like that and getting your Shocklands. So looking at these cards as they're going to hit the bottom because everyone's trying to get them out because they're getting out of Standard. Standard is the most popular format. But the window between now and like December, you know, if you got to look for the low on the cards and you got to make sure that you pick them up and get in now because this will be the absolute low that they will hit until they see another reprint.
Because with everybody dumping at rotation, people are going to be looking for buyers. If you let it be known that you're a buyer for Abrupt Decay and that kind of stuff like that, like, you're going to have people coming to you that think that stuff's going to tank because it's leaving Standard. So some of the stuff that's not quite as obvious, because if you look at rotation last time, Liliana the Veil was not as affected, and Snapcaster Mage was not as affected. So it might not be, yeah. So it might not be like the super obvious cards that are, you know, that are going to be not affected negatively. It's going to be the stuff that you have to think a little bit next level. Supreme Verdict is an excellent example. Because that's something people are like, oh, that's, you know, a standard card. But if that goes to a buck or two, like, you want to scoop all of those. Stuff like Cyclonic Rift, that's high because of EDH, might not go down, but if it does, you definitely want to be a buyer. So there's stuff like that that you definitely want to pay attention to.
All right. Seems like a pretty good Finance 101. Let's jump into this Picks of the Week.
It's time for the Pick of the Week.
Picks of the week. I'll let Ryan and Jason go first. I don't want to steal theirs.
Mine was Mana Confluence. Sorry.
Mine was Soldier of the Pantheon. We've done Mana Confluence and Soldier of the Pantheon before. Let's
That's
give
true.
Everyone
yeah,
some
but
new stuff.
I've never called Mana Confluence at $20+. Like that card is there's no way it doesn't get higher. And all right, I mean Courser. I think everyone's so scared of that card right now because of the recent reprint, and I think Courser is gonna be a $20 card again. I think that you are looking at a format that is identical to what we saw five color control before. Courser is Kitchen Finks. Kitchen Finks would have been a $20 rare. It was still a $4 to $6 uncommon at the time. Like it's mirroring
well,
that exact
those,
format.
I think some of those things that Ryan said are true. I mean, the mana base doesn't necessarily lead itself to the five color control since you don't have as many lands that just painlessly make you five colors. But I agree with Courser. As soon as it starts to kind of bottom out here, I think it basically goes in every deck. If you look at the decks from the last Pro Tour, the shells that survive a rotation all involve Courser and Sylvan Caryatid. And if we don't get a 4 mana Wrath, and it's looking more and more likely we won't based on some things said in Mothership articles, etc., Courser, Caryatid, and Prognostic Sphinx all look very strong.
I thought you said you weren't going to take any of ours.
Yeah, way to go. You just took Caryatid too.
Well, Caryatid's $7 right now. I don't see it going.
It can't go more
high
than
enough
10,
that it's a
yeah.
buy at $7.
Yeah, it can't go more than $10. I don't think.
I just you started
I
naming off a bunch
know if
of
I
cards.
Agree.
I thought it was funny.
I don't agree at all, actually.
How high do you see it going that you want to buy at 7?
You think I'm not saying you 20? Want to buy at 7, but I think you trade for it.
Well, that's exactly what I
day.
Said, and you said you don't agree.
I don't agree that it can't go higher.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't agree that it can't go higher.
I said it can't go high enough that you'll be wish you'd bought at 7. Like, you gotta listen to what I say before
Jason,
you say you don't agree.
Jason, I said it can't go higher than 10, and he said he doesn't agree.
Yeah, I wasn't
no
even talking
to you. No one was listening to Corbin.
Ryan was.
I was, actually, so thanks for ranting. you can suck it.
You don't have Corbin muted?
Oh, no. My God.
I wish I had that button.
You can't even do that in Skype.
If I had that, it would have been the...
This is the best. Jason yells at Ryan for no reason. Ryan tells Jason to suck it, and I get blamed.
Hey, that's how it all works, right? Shit goes downhill.
That's right. Anyways, Jason, why don't you give us your pick so we don't steal it more?
Okay, so my pick of the week is going to be...
Go ahead, Fine. Just poop directly on my forehead.
Oh, you like it like that? Two guys, one cup?
Stop.
Why'd you make a slurping noise? That's weird. Now I can't eat pasta without thinking about sharts.
What?
It's shart week, right?
It's shart week.
I have a shark week rant.
Oh, great. No one wants to hear it.
Yeah, shark week is not what it used to be. I watched Megalodon, and it was dumb.
Shark week's gone down. Gen Con sucks now. Shark week's gone downhill. I got Buffalo Wild Wings at midnight that made me shit in my pants. Is there nothing sacred in the universe anymore?
Nat Geo did a Shark Week ripoff, and they had actual shark shows where you learned about sharks. You didn't just watch them deceive scientists and edit interviews to make them say something they weren't trying to say. Anyway, Shark Week sucks. Tell us about your pick of the week.
Well, I see, I'm full of sell calls right now. Like, I've talked ad nauseum about my pickup calls over the last few weeks, and not much has changed there. But circumstances did conspire to make Legion Loyalist a $5+ card, and I think that is non-correct. I think if you have Legion Loyalist and you're like, well, what do I do now? Ship them. Maybe somebody's looking to play that deck. So if you can sell Legion Loyalist around 5, if you can sell Goblin Rabble Master around 3, I think you do that. Goblin Rabble Master's probably hit its ceiling, because without Legion Loyalist and that sort of thing, I don't think Satter Fire Drinker is enough to keep that red deck going. But I think maybe the set after cons, if there are monocolored cards, that could give us some more burn spells, and maybe we could see Rabble Master being part of a creature-based burn-supported mono-red deck. Or we could get some goblins, because who knows? They're all kind of weird creatures in cons we saw. So
I think
Rabble Master's probably at a ceiling for now, but definitely sell Loyalist.
Yeah. I think the deck could exist if everyone's trying to play these slow 5-color decks or 4-color decks or even 3-color decks with a bunch of tap lands. But I agree with you 100% on the
sells.
Well,
when Cons comes out and we lose Legion Loyalist, you still got a good mono red devotion base, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a question of whether or not that deck, like if the deck playing 22 mountains can take advantage of the fact that everyone else is playing 18 tap lands and Mana Confluence, you know, so.
Yeah, I really wish they'd left Burning Earth around, but I think that would have been a little bit too good if someone's going to take 2 damage to tap a Mana Confluence for mana.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
But, you know, Warlader's Helix is leaving too, so I think Rabble Master's probably at its ceiling for now, and even if it goes higher than it is now later, I think it won't do that without going down first.
Right.
So I think, glad you sold now.
All right. I just sold mine on Modo. $4? Hell fucking yeah.
Marcel, what do you got this week?
All right, so I'm kind of conflicted because I want to give one that's good for paper and Moto, but I'm going to have to choose the Moto one. So I'm going to say Athreos, the god of the passage, and then Zaganos, the god of the revels. So my pick would be Athreos, but I think both of them are good options. Zaganos is better because paper is lower. It's at $4. It's $2.50 online. Athreos is $4 online, and it's $9 in paper. The reason I think a couple of these guys, the 2-color guys are going to blow up because there's going to be a lot more 2-color pips running around. And so it's going to be easier to activate the devotion on these guys. And I think these guys are the ones from this respective sets that has the highest potential. Zaganos is just very, very powerful and can do amazing things. Karanos is another great one. I love that one. It's up to $10 on Moto. So I don't know how much higher it could actually go. I don't see it being more than three of in any deck, but I don't know. So maybe it's the modern applications, but these cards are, the other two are really low. And I think just the amount of the pips are going around, these cards would be activated. We've seen Goblin Bombardment as a reprint. So you play that with Aetherios, that's going to be a pretty sick, synergy in a deck right there. So yeah, I think the potential for these guys to blow will go up and they'll be, you know, $15 cards, $20 cards at some point.
Well, I like what you're saying about Keranos, because Journey to Nyx was drafted not at all. I think everything in that set's primed to continue going up. I really like, in my pick of the week, is Temple of Epiphany out of that set. It's a red-blue one. It's seen, you know, a little fringe modern play in the Storm decks, you know, because it's kind of sets up your draw. But more than that, we see Temple of Malady, $10 from Journey to Nyx. Journey to Nyx was the least open set of the block. It butted up against Conspiracy. There's a lot of upside on it, and Temple of Epiphany is half the price of the other temple in the set. I think it double up here from the $455 it's at to $10 is completely reasonable. If we're, I'll throw in this, yeah. So if we're talking, you know, if you're looking for kind of the card that could come out of nowhere, you know, kind of the Desecration Demon line of going from a dollar to, you know, expensive, something like Silence the Believers. It's heavily played in block. It has some commander applications because it's an exile card in black. It scales really well with mana. All the control decks in block ran it, and it's available for under a dollar. I mean, you know, like, it's not usually a four of. It's kind of like a two to three of, but it's another card that, like, it's a dollar, could easily hit like $3-4 you know, after rotation at a Pro Tour or something. So it's a real easy card to pick up as a throw in that could pay off big.
Oh, yeah. I think the temples have demonstrated that they can be worth a deceptive amount. Everyone just kind of assumed the temples were all around $4, and, you know, based on the meta, some of them really spiked a little bit widely, and I don't really see that changing too much when we lose Shocklands.
Yeah. You know, we talk about these, rotation pickups, and we see with, Xenagos, the Reveler, the Planeswalker version, that they're already starting to happen. The card went from 7 to 15 just in the past week, as people realized that, you know, not only is this card good in a vacuum, this Jund Planeswalker shell, with Xenagos, at its core, the red-green Xenagos block deck, they don't go anywhere. Like, they still share a lot of cards. And using Xenagos, to both pump, to accelerate one turn earlier into your Elspeth, and, just kind of having that engine of just being able to make a Planeswalker-based army, is very strong, and I think that's why Xenagos spiked to 15. And honestly, I see it holding that price for a while, you know, unless the metagame shakes out entirely opposite of what we expect. I wouldn't be surprised to see that stick around.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Xenagos. I think he's like a Garruk replacement in those cards that could really just beat up on control decks. And,
well, yeah, and there's just the line of, turn two Caryatid, turn three Xenagos, turn four Elspeth. It's just kind of unbeatable.
That sounds so juicy. I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I mean, that's that Pro Tour deck, the block Pro Tour. It was called red-green Elspeth because it pretty much just played white for Elspeth. Because you have Xenagos and Sylvan Caryatid to make all your mana.
Did they play Purphoros? Please tell me they played Purphoros.
I don't think they did. I did see that at a Star City Open a couple weeks ago. Xenagos, Purphoros, and Elspeth all on the table.
So what do you guys think about Xenagos? What's your guys' stats? Are you happy about him? Think it's hype? You think he's going to hold?
I don't know. It's hard to distinguish because I think there was a strong case made for it, but I didn't think that strong case mattered because I think the Buyout Brigade got a hold of it. And whether or not it was going to go up, it has. So I don't know if I'm a buyer now.
No.
But I'm not a seller now either. So it's sort of a thing that it's just kind of too late.
Yeah, it's just one of those you hope that people were on. I mean, it's not a surprise. Like, when we talk about the Pro Tour, the Block Pro Tour, and even the M15 Pro Tour, Xenagos was all over the place. People just hadn't, you know, made the move. And then once it started getting some hype, people said, hey, I want to be in on this, and they moved on it. And now I think the price is pretty much right. Jace held $20 for a long time.
That's something Time Elemental mentioned. Everybody was trampling each other to death to get a copy of Goblin Rabble Master on Friday. No one waited till Sunday and noticed how many Xenagoses were in the top 8. Like sometimes, like on a new card that's never spiked before, like Sunday's too late, you know? Finance moves at the speed of light. So you're not going to buy Thassa's, you know, and Bidens of Thassa and Master of Waves on Sunday. You know, your orders are getting canceled on Friday. But on something like Xenagos that's just sort of old and everyone kind of knows what the price is and everyone's kind of got their copies, stuff like that, you could definitely benefit by checking the top eight of a Pro Tour. And people really aren't doing that. And that's like Finance 201 right there. That's something you should know.
Yeah. I mean, it was, like you said, it wasn't a surprise. Like, and it didn't even happen after the Pro Tour. It happened a week and a half, 2 weeks after the Pro Tour. So, I mean, on one hand, you can kind of paint this as MTG Finance doing its job in the sense that the writers, you know, who talked about it saw that this was a card that had the potential to go up, but had not gone up, put the word out there to readers, to get a hold of them before that happened. And I mean, you know, as you said, the Buyout Brigade certainly played a part in it, but somewhere in there, there are real players who, you know, took the advice of people who, you know, write about this for a reason and were hopefully able to pick up their copies before it hit the price that it was going to hit all along.
Well said.
So you got to read your email?
Yes. Let's read an email.
Yeah, that's what we just asked you to do, man.
Best segue ever. Man.
I like it because in the show notes, Corbin just said, let's skip reader emails.
Hey.
We hit an hour or 50 minutes. No, we are in an hour.
Hey, we're going to cut to your second B-Dub story. So,
good.
Yeah, yeah, let's we got do the email. You just probably right. Email and wrap
we
it up.
We used the fuck word way too many times. We're going to have to cut a lot of instances of the fuck word.
I have a reader email. I think we'll do two. However, this one I want to read first simply because this is so awesome. Gentlemen. My name is Patrick Jose, and I've been listening to your podcast for a little over a year. I've been playing Magic on and off since 1994. Like some, I offloaded my childhood collection early on for what might as well have been a pocket full of dice. However, I now find myself with a decent collection and have been doing a good job trading up into Modern Legacy. I want to say thank you for all the MTG Finance advice you guys have provided the whole community. I truly feel that without it, I would not have been able to afford to play as much as I do, let alone afford to be the least bit competitive. To show my appreciation, I would like to send you all care packages, which will include a sampling of delicious craft beer from Ska Brewing Company, where I am a professional brewer. Thank you again. Patrick Jose, the brewhouse supervisor for Ska Brewing in Durango, Colorado. Not only does his job sound like the coolest possible job you could ever have, I would like to most definitely give him and his company a shout out, for being incredibly awesome.
Oh, so, while we're on the business of giving shout outs for being incredibly awesome, we got Dave Estelle from Steel Series. Dave Estelle from Steel Series.
Yes.
He sent Ryan a new headset for him to test out and review. So if you like the voice of Ryan, he is now rocking. What's the model of the headset you got on there?
This is the 9H gaming headset from Steel Series. Who also sponsors a bunch of my favorite League of Legends teams.
And what do you think about the headset right now? Give a quick review.
I like it a ton. The microphone is probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. It comes out of like the side of the headset. I don't know. It's like it's super hidden. It's cool. But I'm still getting over like I went from potato to, you know, like a microphone, and that was really cool to me and like brand new. So this is like space age technology to me right here.
The space age started in 1953. Technically the transistor radio is space age technology.
God, we really need to get out working on that like mute ability on people.
You can tell how new it is to Ryan because it took him 20 minutes to figure out how to turn it on.
Well, the
and
cords,
it's not because
the cords
it's
are
it's not
awkward.
Because it's difficult to turn on. It's because it's space age technology to Ryan.
No, it really isn't that difficult. Like I didn't realize the cords had to be like the ends
plugged
of the cords
in.
All fit together, but they have to be plugged in like an exact way. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I don't know. I'm sure I messed it up somewhere, but like I think there was a tag on one of the things and it fell off in the bottom of this, and that helped or that did not help me at all.
So,
it's complicated. Like a transistor
I found the tag after the 20 minutes of trying to figure out how to make it work.
It's complicated like trying to post something on WordPress, which That's if right. you wanted to hear that, you could check out. We have a 30-minute episode on After Hours where we and you can listen to it.
My understanding. You can. I don't suggest it, but you can.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's Ryan versus WordPress, and WordPress wins.
Mind you, all our after-hour episodes are usually 10 to 15, and this is the one episode that's like 30 minutes, and there's a reason that's that long.
We couldn't find a spot to cut. It was
awesome.
Oh, we still cut stuff. There's stuff that we cannot put out there, even in after-hours, but yeah.
Anyway, so that's Ryan versus WordPress. WordPress wins. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Patrick. It is great to hear from you guys. So let's move on to another one here. We can actually maybe give some advice, rather than just tell our fans how awesome they are, which they are. So here we go. This is from, Jeremy, Batchend. Maybe that's how you say it. Jeremy B. He says, "Hey guys, I've been a Brainstorm Brewery listener for a while now, and I've gleaned a lot of info from you all, as well as laughed my ass off along the way. As primarily a standard player, I like to construct a deck early on each season and then set to work on foiling my deck shortly thereafter, integrating new cards as the meta changes. Come rotation, I usually sell or buy lists the foils from the deck, using the cash to buy foils from the upcoming set to replace the old ones. My question to you all is, since Modern became a thing, should I perhaps keep the rotating foils instead? Selling around rotation has become less lucrative due to the summer doldrums, and many times I come to regret my sales because they rise in price after rotation due to eternal play, i.e. selling my foil playset of Cavern of Souls when zombies are rotated. I like being able to use my cards to consistently pay for my deck, but would it just be easier and more profitable to buy new cards outright and keep my old foils and hope that they appreciate over time? Is this also a good way to eventually build a modern deck down the line? And lastly, how long after rotation should I hold my foil playsets of all three Jund Shocklands? Anyway, sorry for the long-winded question. Just wanted to pick your insightful and alcohol-soaked brains." Nice. Thanks so much, and keep on killing it. So what do you guys think? Let's see. The main question is foils here. So standard foils. We have one of the rare players in the world who actually foils a standard deck. Do you think he should keep his foils at rotation or sell them off to foil out his next deck?
I tell people all the time that this guy doesn't exist, so I'm not convinced Ryan didn't pay this guy to write in. Like, yeah, pretend you foil out your standard deck.
Now, I was a little confused when I read the email, too. I don't even know what the correct – I don't want to say you're doing it wrong, but you're doing it wrong. Don't foil out standard.
That's not – if he wants to foil out standard, let him foil out standard.
Hey, we gave him the advice so that he can afford to foil out standard.
But that means he could afford to foil. All right, how's this? Any card that is modern playable or legacy playable, you should hold on to. And every card that isn't, you shouldn't have had in the first place.
Oh.
Let's take the first part of Ryan's answer and call that good advice, because it is. Cavern of Souls, for instance, is that was a good one to keep a foil of. The Shocklands that you bring up here, I think those are not going to go. The foil copies aren't going down at all. Just keep them. Hold them. You're not going to regret that decision. Something, you know, like Courser of Kruphix, probably not going to go down. It sees some modern play. On the other hand, you know, there are some cards that you pretty much know just aren't going to make it in modern. You know, like if you're playing mono, if you're foiled out a mono blue deck, right, you know Cloudfin Raptor is not going to be a foiled out card in modern. You know, Judge's Familiar is unlikely to be played in modern. You know, if you're in Jund, like Sylvan Caryatid is unlikely to be played a lot in modern, stuff like that. I think the rest of it, you are probably just best. Foils don't get hit by, if they're eternal playable foils, they do not get hit by rotation that much. A lot of times they just continue to go up because they were never really affected by standard in the first place. Because Jeremy, you are one of the few players in the world who actually care about standard foils. So I think, you know, the advice, there is to, if it is modern playable or legacy playable or EDH playable, keep the foil. If it's something you're fairly confident is just standard, sell it off.
Hold on, I got something for you right now. You know about pack rat foils jumping $20 in literally the past couple days? They were $5.50 and now they're going for $24.
They got played
in.
This is on Moto? This is paper.
Wow.
It got played in legacy or something?
It got played in modern.
Did it really? That's disgusting.
Oh, wow.
That shouldn't even be
good. That was somebody saying, you know what? The foil's too cheap. It's time for a price correction. And someone just bought out TCG Player, and that's all it took.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I mean,
Maybe you don't have to buy out the whole internet anymore. You used to have to buy out the whole internet, and everyone's like, oh, it's too expensive. Now you just buy 10 copies of a card on TCG Player, and then, and like, the, you change the price forever. It's insane. It's insane how it's gotten.
I mean, maybe Packrat's the next thing in Modern. I really hope not. That would just be absurd. That a card that went a year without being played in Standard takes over Modern.
It's being played right now. They got a token
deck. I'm just saying. It's a $2 non-foil and a $24 foil. I don't think those numbers hold.
Eidolon of the Great Revel is a $5 non-foil and a $30 foil.
Well, that's six times. That's six times. Pack Rat is 12 times. Right?
It's twice as much. I don't know. It's just still like that's the premium, I guess. If there's even like a modicum of a case to be made for it, that's all that matters anymore. It's silly, but that's kind of how it is. It looks like.
Yeah. I mean, in your case, Jeremy, if you're dead set on foiling out Standard and you have to sell those old foils to pay for the new one and that's just your thing, go for it. If not, I would suggest keeping the foil, Modern stuff, because even if those cards in particular don't end up becoming a Modern deck for you, the time may come a few years down the line where you want to put together a different Modern deck or whatever. And the fact that, oh, you just happen to have a playset of foil Cavernous Souls, will get you a long way towards whatever you're trying to actually put together. So, and now you're on the fast track to having a foiled out Modern deck and just having a really pimp deck like foil Merfolk. So there you go.
That's how you build a foil Modern deck. Foil out your Standard deck and wait.
Every year. All right. I'm throwing this out there. Don't be mad. I know you guys aren't going to like this story.
We already don't.
Chris, a listener. Again? No. Okay. Chris is a listener of ours from Austin, Texas. I ran into him to SCG Dallas and was telling him my plight on my Modern Merfolk deck, where I had 73 cards foil out of 75. And, you know, kind of the challenge I set for myself was to trade for every foil in the deck to get it there. And all I was missing was a Scab Ruinator, because I just kind of put it in my sideboard. And, it's good. I'll get to that later. But it's truly good.
Make it good. Oh, please make it good.
I just tell you, it's truly good.
Please make it good. No, I don't want to hear truly good. I don't even want to hear from you. Really.
It's a one of in the sideboard of Merfolk to bring in against red, white, blue, because red, white, blue just kills your creatures over and over. You can vial it in on three, which is a totally, cause those games against red, white, blue go long, but it won me a match last in Dallas that weekend I was playing just for being able to cast out of the graveyard. Along with Thassa, it allows you to play the long game against the red, white, blue decks and not just get blown out by Lightning Bolt, Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix. You know, they go Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile, and then you play a Scab Ruinator from your graveyard and they don't have Path to Exile in hand. They can't kill it. Anyway, so that's the story in that card. It's an awesome one of against red, white, blue and probably bad everywhere else. But the hard one to find was Hercule's Recall, because it's only a foil in 10th edition, and I went to two Grand Prix and a Star City Open, and not a single dealer or large trader had it. And all the big guys were at these places, and nobody had one. Chris was a hero, tracked it down for me, brought it and the Scab Ruinator to Portland, and traded them to me, and I have completed the quest of having a fully foiled Modern Merfolk deck, and I was very excited. So thank you, Chris.
For Merfolk! Yeah!
That was a really long story.
I don't know if I dislike that more or foiling out Standard. And you're right, I didn't like that story, but it was still better than your two about B-dubs.
So, Ryan, I heard you got a brew on
deck. I do.
No, we're just about at an hour, guys. Brainstorm Brewery, thank you for joining us. I've been your co-host, Jason.
Oh, this brew is sweet. Like, I don't know. I built this thinking it was going to be terrible. I've been wanting to play around with Immortal Servitude forever, and then Purphoros came out, and I really wanted to play that, and there was just no shell for it, and I kept thinking it had to be Voice of Resurgence. Like, that card had to be in there. And I started playing around with it the other night, and I have this Jund variant, and I am currently 12-3 in two mans with it. So, I mean, it's something. Like, I'm having a tough time with red deck wins, but I'm working on that. But, more or less, like, you're running Sylvan Caryatid, Xur'Tah Druid as your two mana guys, Burning Tree Emissary, Purphoros, Painseer out of the sideboard. I'm trying to remember what else in the deck has. I can just open up the deck list right here. Give me a second.
This is going back right here. This is like 60 episodes ago. Ryan brews some decks.
Yeah, and this was just supposed to be bad, but so it's Satyr Wayfinder. It's 3 Satyr Wayfinder, 3 Pack Rat, 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 3 Wall of Mulch, 1 Tiamat, the Murder King, 4 Grizzly Salvage, 4 Burning Tree Emissary, 4 Xur'Tah Druid, 3 Genesis Hydra, 3 Purphoros, 3 Court of Calling, 4 Immortal Servitude is the deck list.
What does your deck do if it doesn't draw Immortal Servitude? Do you play 2/2s until you win?
Yeah, like you're a Pack Rat deck. You can just go find creatures with the Grizzly Salvage. Like eventually you just find a Purphoros and you're usually winning that way. But I've won plenty of games where my opponent slaughter games me for Immortal Servitude and Purphoros, one of the games. Most of the time they take one or the other and still manage to get there. You're just like, you ride Pack Rat or any of number of the other creatures to victory. And sometimes you just get those like turn 2 Burning Tree, Xur'Tah Druid, like go. And then turn Genesis Hydra. Genesis Hydra is like Hunt Master in this deck. It's really weird.
I'm unsure how your deck beats, Esper, but I'll believe you.
Actually, my control matchup's been insane. Like the Immortal Servitude, you wait for them because you're putting so much early pressure on. Like
yeah,
they're forced to tap out, and then when they go to Wrath, you bring that back, and they don't have a lot of ways of interacting with Purphoros if you land him. So, like, he's not usually a creature, so it's harder for them to deal with, and he's usually not a creature until you play the Immortal Servitude. So,
I mean, honestly, it seems good against the blue-white planar cleansing deck, maybe. Let's go against actual Esper.
It's really good against the mid-range decks. That's most of what I'm having success with. Like, those don't even feel close. Like, it's just like block a bunch, Immortal Servitude, bring all my dudes back, kill you.
Interesting. Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I didn't expect the deck to be good at all, but it hasn't shown me otherwise yet. So I'm considering trying to sleeve this up here in 2 weeks for the WMCQ.
Oh, man. Indy. Brian plays Magic?
I mean, every once in a while I get one of those brews. Like, it's a lot of fun when your control opponent's sitting at like 32 after Sphinx's Revelation, and suddenly late game you just kill them. So
that does sound like they played wrong.
This sounds like completely a Ryan deck. I love it.
It sounds like your opponent should probably hold up Dissolve, but you know they could die instead.
I mean, yeah, that's true. Sure. However, they don't always have those options. Like they only have 4 in the deck. There's a lot of things you want to counter.
Or Detention Sphere, your Purphoros.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what they want to counter. Seems like they just let all your stuff die and then they counter your thing. But whatever. It's definitely a rogue deck, and that's one of the benefits you get from playing a rogue deck.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like I said, I don't know how good it actually is. And I expect to see less mono red in real life too. That seems to be a really popular thing in 2-mans, which is annoying because it's not a good matchup for me. But yeah, it's been fun to play at the very least. I'm having a blast like killing people out of nowhere.
There you go, guys. Ryan Bouchard breaks standard.
Full circle. You get the full plated Brainstorm Brewery, just like the old school. We brought you finance. We brought you deck brewing. We gave you stories about debauchery. And, of course, Corbin brought the B-dubs. So what more could you ask for? We brought back the old, the new, and made it all to this package right here. It's a wonderful episode. And we're out of here. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.